not to talk about family when family's all that we got. Everything I went through, you were standing there by my side. And now you're gonna be with me for the last one.
Hello and welcome to Too Fast, Too Forever. There's all kinds of family. We chose this one. This is episode 12. I am Paul Walker from 2018. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe Too. And this episode is brought to you by Reach Out Worldwide. When you put goodwill out there, it's amazing what can be accomplished.
Yeah.
I thought that's the perfect sponsor for this episode, pretty much, right?
Paul Walker's charity, absolutely.
Yeah, Reach Out Worldwide is an agile group of first responders and other professionals in the medical and construction-related fields who augment local expertise when natural disasters strike in order to accelerate relief efforts. So we appreciate what Reach Out Worldwide does, and although he didn't want it to be known, we want it to be known that that's his charity.
Yeah. So this is the hour-long documentary about Paul Walker's life that Paramount aired earlier this month to commemorate, I guess, or to honor the five-year anniversary of his passing.
It's been 5 years. Wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. November, I think I wrote it down. It was in there. November 30th, 2013, just after Thanksgiving.
Wow. I can't believe it didn't feel like 5 years, right? It hasn't.
The only reason I know why it's 5 years, well, there's two things. There's two reasons that I know why. Number one, because it was the same year that Fast and Furious 6 came out. And I remember rewatching it and being sad. Like, I remember, because toward the end of the year, I was like,
no, seven.
Do I like this movie?
Was it 7 or 6?
It was 6.
Okay, they were shooting 7, but it was 6 came out. Okay.
Yes. 6 came out. I was rewatching at the end of the year because I loved that movie so much in theaters, and I loved it so much this time around.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, this is kind of a bummer. So I remember that. And number two, I just remember, like, what apartment I was living in when that happened. Like, I remember where I was when I heard.
Was it the one that I've been to?
No, it was the other one, the one before. This was before I moved down to Texas for a couple of years.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, so, I mean, I just remember sort of two things. So, I mean, I would have to think about it, but it's been a while. I mean, you know, he missed the whole movie, obviously, and then part of Furious 7, but as we saw, or as we heard earlier this week, and we'll talk about it on the next episode, you know, that's going to come out next week, the Too Fast, Too Furious episode, the full episode.
Yeah.
His family wants to bring Brian back into the movies.
Yes, they do, which I don't know how I feel about.
I don't know either. We'll get into that on the next episode.
Okay.
What I can say, though, is that in this documentary, they have interviews with his family and his brothers. And two things. Number one, his brothers look so much like him. But number two,
they do and they don't.
They do and they don't. You're right. But did you notice his entire family has the same blue eyes?
Piercing blue eyes. Yes, yep. I absolutely noticed that. And it was awesome. It was really, really cool to see. Because that is how I think that I even relate that they're like very related. You know what
yep.
I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I see that and I was just like, oh, yeah, this is definitely like his sister. And this is definitely his brother. And stuff like that. So it's kind of creepy how much his one friend looked like him too, like his stunt double friend. Like when they like kind of
yes.
like dressed up, then they sound identical. That's what we were saying when we were watching this documentary. We were like, holy fuck, he and his friend, like his stunt double best friend, like they sound so much alike. It's scary.
Well, yeah, they grew up together, and what I liked about that part of the documentary is that like it seemed like he kept like his, you know, his lifelong buddies with him to sort of keep him grounded. That it
That's
feels like
said,
a lot
yeah.
of people, yeah, that like, you know, Hollywood could kind of fuck you up in a lot of ways. But this guy who's sort of with him for this whole life, that he was like his body double or stunt double, he was just there sort of not only just, you know, earn a paycheck and do his thing that, you know,
yeah,
with
he
Paul,
was like taking care of his buds, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But also like when he, you know, was itching or jonesing or whatever, like there's a couple times similarly but separately where he's just like, I gotta get back in the water, but it just feels like, you know, he's this kid who like sort of doesn't want to be a movie star, like he wants to be just a guy. And so I think it's smart to have these people who are not there looking out for themselves. They're making a living, but they're also looking out for you, you know, the movie star in the situation.
Yeah, I thought that that was like one of the coolest parts, is when his friend said like, I know Paul, and he said many times to me, like, if I could do anything, I just want to be a park ranger and, like, make, like, $20,000 a year. And I was like, damn, like, I wouldn't expect that, because we think of him in this, like, huge aura and this franchise and stuff like that, for him to be such, like, a kind of simple kind of guy. You know, like, this was,
right.
I think this was a great documentary to show another side of him that I didn't know about, at least.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, did you know any of this stuff? Like, before we watched this, did you know, like, about his outdoorsiness and how he really kind of didn't want to do these and stuff like that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I knew the movies that he was in. I'd seen a few of them, not too many of them.
I haven't seen, like, pretty much any of them, what I learned. Go ahead.
I saw, like, one or two. His family, the fact that he had a girlfriend. I think it was sort of telling that she wasn't interviewed in the documentary. Like, I don't know if they had a falling out, but, you know, he had a daughter that he really loved and that he was missing, that he was, you know, sad that he wasn't able to see her growing up.
On that note, there's a lot of people that were, like, part of the story but weren't interviewed. Like, I kind of get that Meadow's not involved, you know, his girlfriend slash baby's mom.
Right.
Like, that was kind of weird that she's not in it. There were some other people involved that weren't in it, and I was like, why aren't these people involved? You know what I mean? Like, how did you only get Tyrese from the movies about it?
Well, I think we know why we got Tyrese, because Tyrese will probably do anything for a dollar.
Yeah. He seemed pretty genuine about it. I wonder if he made any money to do this, you know?
I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know if he got paid. What was the most important thing or the coolest thing about Tyrese in this was that he said that, you know, that for whatever reason, like, he sort of hinted at, like, this, like, sinister behind-the-scenes, like, machinations.
Yes.
But, like, Paul Walker was the driving force behind getting Tyrese to come back in, you know, in five, right?
So yeah, he says it, like, he wasn't in 3 or 4... And that's not because he didn't want to be in them, but it was only because of Paul Walker and
that he came back. Yeah,
he came back. Yeah,
right. There's a couple things, like, what I liked about this especially is that it kicks off with two things back to back. Like, the second thing we see is an interview with Tyrese. Like, I think that's smart in terms of documentary. Like, hey, we got some stars for this. We got some people that you know. He also has a great quote. He says, you know, the reason we're all devastated by him is because he was the nicest dude on human feet, which I think is a cool quote.
That's a very cool quote. I like that one too. Yeah. It was, like, just a cool way to put it. It was a new original way to do it. And it was, like, very Tyrese of him. You know, like, he just saying something wacky, but it's, like, also genuine, it felt like. So.
Yeah, exactly. But it starts out with a thing that I thought was going to be, like, an indicator that I was going to cry during this thing. I did not cry.
I didn't. Yeah, I agree.
Like, the one of the very first things you see, if not the first thing you see, is Paul's 15th birthday party.
Yes.
Or, like, you know, his parents singing happy birthday to him. And he looks at the camera and, like, licks his lips or, like, you know, sticks his tongue out or whatever, like, in a way that I'm like, oh, shit, like, that's Brian. Like, you know, that, like, that's the guy that we know in this, like, 15-year-old kid. And I was like, oh, if that's where you're starting, like, I'm going to be sobbing by the end of this. But I feel like it never really tugs on the heartstrings, which I was looking on Letterboxd after I watched this, I logged this.
Okay.
And a lot of the less favorable reviews were talking about how apparently Paramount's done, like, a handful of these kind of documentaries, and they're all just sort of like a, hey, remember how great a guy this guy was? Like, let's remember him, but not actually go deep into his life. Like, it just sort of seems like very surface level, which I sort of see as criticism. Like, I feel like if they went real deep and, like, got some, like, real hard-hitting interviews, like, went deeper, like, I could maybe cry, but, like, I feel like it starts in a place that I thought I was going to sob, and I just didn't get there.
Yeah, they took a very superficial direction, like you were saying, just not superficial, but, like, on the surface. You know, like, there's nothing here that's going to make you feel really emotional about it. Just showing, like, oh, remember him. He's a good guy. Here's his family. Here's all the good things we said about him. They, like, kind of dabble in the, like, his demons and stuff like that. But they never get there deep enough to, like, really push you emotionally, like we were saying, to get me to feel really bad about it, you know?
Right.
And I already do feel bad about it, and it's somebody that, like, I'm, like, quasi-involved with this and stuff like that, so it wouldn't have taken them much to get us there, but they kept it lighter, and I think that might be a directive choice, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, you know, sort of, it feels like it's kind of fluff, which is okay.
Yeah.
It's not there to, you know, win awards. It's not there to make you cry. I think it's just there to sort of, like, fill an hour and a half on Paramount Network and, you know, get a bunch of people together to remember a guy that, like, the people loved. I mean, I think it's just there, you know, not in a bad way, but just there to sort of be watched and, you know, make money and whatever. Like, it's there, which I'm just glad that it had stuff in there. I mean, we also have not done any real research into the franchise or into the actors.
No,
because
we're going
to
get this
there forever. Yeah.
That's why we're like, I mean, it's not because I don't want to. It's just because I know that as we keep going, I'm sure we will get to a point where it's just like, you start learning this stuff and picking up on it. Yeah.
And especially with Paul Walker, like, we decided, I don't know if we said it on the air on the last episode or not, but our first pit stop lap is going to be the Paul Walker Memorial Lap. We're going to do, like, 8 or 9, whatever, however many there are, like, the ones in between, we're going to do, like, 8 or 9 of his movies that are not Fast and Furious that we really want to see and talk about. Stuff
Skulls.
Like the skulls and stuff. Like, I really want to see Pleasantville, which looked really cool. Like, him as that.
I've never
like,
seen
football.
It. I was going to ask if you've ever seen it.
No. But also stuff like Into the Blue, that Jessica Alba movie where he's like swimming in it. Or, you know, I want to see like Running Scared again, which I saw back when like it came out on DVD. And I was like, oh, I'm so like, I'm such an adult for watching this, you know, when I was like 18 or 19 or whatever. But like,
oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it was just like one of those like, it was like this real gruesome, hard hitting, whatever. Like, I don't know if it's good now. But what was cool is like that, you know, the people talking about like how good he was in these movies. I mean, they had his manager, they had Rob Cohen, who directed him in both The Skulls and in the first
Fast and
Furious.
I never knew this connection. This is what I'm glad that we're getting into, like, random facts. Like, I didn't know. Did you? I'm sure that you did know this. Did you know this?
Well, I didn't know anything about The Skulls. Like, The Skulls is a movie that you're super, super passionate about. I've never seen. I didn't know that Rob Cohen directed that, but it was cool to see that he was like, you know, he had him for this, I guess, smaller part or whatever. And then Paul just kept asking, like, you got something for me? He's like, yeah, I told you I'm making this next movie for you. And they told him about it. He's like, oh, that's exactly what I want to do.
And it's really cool that he goes from The Skulls to Fast and the Furious, that it was only because, like, Rob Cohen kind of took him under his wing a little bit.
Yep.
And, like, all of these things came together. I thought that was really cool. I never connected the two. As much as I love The Skulls and as much as I love Fast and the Furious, I never knew that they were relatable. Like, they were, like, connected.
Yeah.
That was super cool for me to see, and cool that he, it was only because of his director that this happened. You know what I mean? Like, maybe the Fast and the Furious would have never come to be if Paul Walker wasn't in The Skulls and he didn't play this character. And actually, he has a pretty big role in The Skulls. He's not, like, the main actor, but he's, like, second.
Gotcha.
Obviously.
Okay. I was also thinking that, you know, when we do the first stop, we could do a pit stop if we can find stuff online for... apparently, he was on Shark Week a lot. Like, he has... Like,
I want to watch
really
a lot
big...
of these. Yeah, they show in the documentary. Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty cool. They talk about a lot about how he comes from, like, this line of badasses, and his dad was, like, this military guy, and his grandpa was, like, this mechanic who, like, was just, like, this real man's man, like, didn't talk to anybody, but, like, talked to Paul, because Paul was, like, into cars and stuff. And I think it was cool to see where he came from, and also, like, how that influences him, but at the same time, like, how he was just essentially kind of like a laid-back surfer bro that also had, like, this, like, fierce streak inside him that, like, you didn't want to cross him.
Yeah, I like that they show, like, they really expressed the dichotomy of, like, he was a laid-back surfer hippie, but then at the same time, he liked guns and cars and, like, all this other shit.
Right.
Like, he had, like, a really diverse personality. You know, like, he's not, you can't really pigeonhole guys like this, that he's, like, tame and laid-back and he plays, like, such a chill dude all the time, but then also was, like, known for, like, getting into fights all the time and, you know, doing extreme sports and stuff, so.
And from the sound of it, like, not losing fights either. There was that one, I don't remember who was saying it, but there was that one story, for whatever reason, maybe because he had, like, the frosted tips or whatever, just sort of like he looked like a surfer bro, but they said that, you know, he held a door open for somebody walking out of a grocery store.
Yeah.
The guy's like, thanks, bitch, and then, like, Paul Walker just,
it
like,
was
fucked
his dad
him up.
Telling the story, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. And it was just like, oh, like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not necessarily my speed, but I can respect it. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to be a laid back looking dude and somebody likes to press your buttons and you have a short temper, sure. Maybe that's what happens.
Yeah. There's a Zeph connection here that he played a special needs kid, you know, just
oh,
like.
Oh, God. I didn't even make that
just
connection.
Just like Miracle Run, you know, this handsome actor playing a special needs kid, just like, oh.
Really well. Pretty well.
Okay.
I liked some things that we saw, that dog food commercial he was in. Dude, that was the coolest thing, you know, to see him, like, as a very small kid, because you can clearly tell it's Paul Walker. Like, he just hadn't fully grown into his body or his image yet, but, yeah, there was, like, a lot of really, really interesting stuff like that I didn't know about, so I was really stoked on it.
It seemed like, and I'm sure that a lot of this is sort of exaggeration to raise the myth of Paul Walker or whatever, but they were saying about how when he did, like, auditions and stuff as a kid, he would get a call back, not necessarily get the audition, get the part, but, like, get a call back, like, 80% of the time. And you can see, like, he's just, like, this good-looking young kid who also can act for the most part and nails the lines, like, whether he's doing dog food or, like, that, you know, that thing where it's, it kind of looks like they're, you know, the Stand By Me kids or whatever, just, like, whatever they're looking for, he's kind of got that all-American face, but also that, you know, surfer bro face, or, you know, they talk later in life about how he went to New York or went to the East Coast to, like, get that down so he could sort of do those kind of parts, I think, for The Skulls, right? And, like, you know, whatever you kind of needed, he was able to provide for you.
Yeah, he in The Skulls, he plays, like, the most, you know, all-American kind of kid, and he has the idea of it down, right? Because he's, like, a car guy, and he was an athlete and stuff like that, but he was such a surfer bro that it was hard for him to, like, get out of the California a little bit. So I thought it was cool that we learned that he went to New York and was just like, I'm just going to live here for a while and just figure shit out, you know?
Yeah. Did you catch, I think I heard this right, did you catch that they were that he was raised Mormon?
They mentioned it really quickly, and right? I thought that I heard it too. Yeah, so if he was, that's something that I didn't know.
Right.
Is there a huge Mormon population in California? Like, I have no idea about any of it, so.
I don't know,
it's not
but
like
I
he was
think,
in, like, Utah or something, you know?
No, I do think that there is, you know, I can see it, like, in the handsome blonde people who are just sort of nice and very family focused and family friendly and, like, good to those close to them, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
All sort of more positive things. But what I was kind of pleasantly surprised about is that, you know, he has this child out of wedlock with the girl, but, like,
yes.
Because the girl had been around all her life basically,
it was,
or for
dude,
a while.
Honestly, did you make the connection?
What, like Mia?
No, Rebecca's his letty, man.
How so?
They were friends. Then she got a little older, then he noses her, then they're friends, then
okay.
They're together, then they're friends, and I was like, oh, dude, she's, like, the perfect, like, Letty, you know what I mean? She was, like, a girl that was hanging around them, and then they kind of fall in love, but then they're friends again.
All right.
Yeah. And maybe he had erased her back into memory, who knows?
Well, what I liked was that the mom basically took, it seemed like she took her in and the baby in, even though they weren't married, even though, like, it
yeah.
wasn't, you know, her daughter, but it just seems...
For such, like, a family kind of conservative, kind of religious that we kind of caught, family, yeah, that was a very, very cool thing of them to do, and, like, not just, like, you know, kick Paul Walker out.
Right.
So.
And that seems to lead to what appears to be, like, his biggest, the biggest regret of his life, in that he wanted to be, you know, this super dad, I think they say, but his career took off basically as his daughter was born, and he couldn't really be there. Like, he wanted to be there.
Yeah.
But that, he was always this, like, pull, like, this push and pull of, like, I'm becoming more and more of a movie star, but at the same time...
And I can provide for my daughter now. Like,
yes.
His whole goal was to be, like, the best and give his daughter everything he could,
yep.
But at the same time, to do that, he'd have to go shoot for 4 or 5 months at a time.
Right.
And leave her. So, yeah, I can't imagine having to deal with this, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm thinking about it now, like, if I could give Rachel everything she could ever dream of, but also not be with her for... you know, half the year, what are you really accomplishing? Is it anything better than I'm doing now or worse or what, you know? Like,
yep. Yeah, I get it.
It's hard to think about. And if you had kids, like, I can only relate to Rachel because I don't have kids. So if I had kids, what would I choose? You know, do you want to be in their lives more or have the money to give them whatever they want? What would you rather leave them with? I don't know.
Exactly. It's kind of, you know, to reference another one of our podcasts, Boyfriend Material, it's kind of like, you know, for the gods beyond the pines, like, or is it a good Boyfriend Material thing when you rob banks to take care of your kids? Like, you're doing something,
it's not
like you're providing
thing,
for them, but you're
the
also
same...
not, yeah.
It's in the same vein. I can agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what do you give up of yourself to provide for your family? And
exactly.
Yeah.
What I did like, though, is that when he went away to make these movies, he seemed, like, really intent on getting everything right. Like, they were talking about, I think, for maybe at least the first Fast and Furious, if not also Too Fast, Too Furious, that everybody else on set was just sort of there to make a movie. But, like, Paul knew, like, what size turbos everything was. Like, he did
his
homework.
Well, he's a fucking gearhead anyways.
Yeah.
You know, if his grandfather was a mechanic and he was, like, racing and dicking around on quads and dirt bikes beforehand, this is a dream role for anybody like that, right? Like, this is exactly what you want to do. You're like, oh, yeah, like, I want to be a movie star that gets to drive cool cars and, like, hang out with pretty girls all day. Like, who the fuck doesn't? And then
right.
If you're a car guy on top of it, it's like, oh, fuck, like, this is amazing.
Yep. And it was funny to hear that, you know, he drives a Tacoma truck, but that he still preferred, if he had to pick, he always preferred, like, the tuners to the American Muscle. So, like, he kind of was
that Ryan. Was a really cool part, too, yeah, because they show you his garage, and, like they said, it was kind of understated in the sense that he didn't buy, like, Bugattis and McLarens and fucking all this rowdy shit. He had Skylines and Mustangs and fucking old cars and, like, muscle cars. Like, a lot of the cars look like they could have been in the movies, right? Like, everything that he had in that garage was, like, I mean, not talking 7 and 8, where, like, the cars became, like, hypercars. He just had, like, cars that you'd have fun driving. Like, it seemed like he was just a dude that just wanted to have fun, so.
Yeah.
I'm sure that you picked up on this, and I wanted to know which one it was. Let's talk about Paul Walker being Superman.
Oh, yeah. So this was 2003, I think they were saying.
This
so
isn't
this
the Cage
been...
one for sure, right?
No, because that was 98, 99. This would have been
As
the
a little
Brandon
backstory
Ralph
for
one.
Other people that don't know this is on Cage Club Podcast Network, and I've heard you and Mike talk about the lost Cage Superman, and I was wondering if this was also the same Paul Walker Superman, how the timing pans out, because it could have been, right? This is almost the same time.
No, because this, so the Cage Superman, which is going to be directed by Tim Burton, would have come out, like, they were working on that in, like, 98, 99, so after Batman and Robin came out, they wanted to have Superman in that same universe. 2 weeks before they started shooting, they did all the pre-production, costume fitting, they did, you know, scouting, they did all this different stuff, and then 2 weeks before they were set to shoot, they pulled out, like, the producers pulled out, funding pulled out, whatever, so they never made the movie. So that went away, and then also I think because of how badly Batman and Robin tanked, they were just like, we should probably distance ourselves from this. So then, in real life, I think in 06 or 07, Superman Returns came out, and that was with Brandon Routh as Superman. That was Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor.
Okay.
So I'm guessing, based on the time, this would have been for that. But what I thought was most interesting about the Superman thing, it almost seemed like, I mean, and again, just sort of like we talk about with IMDb on, like, on the other podcast, like, we don't know if IMDb trivia is real.
Yeah.
It also feels like everything in here, everything's like, oh, it was, you know, it was Paul Walker's world. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't know if this is actually, like, how close this was, but it feels like, based on this documentary.
They said he had, like, a fake butt and a cape on, so, like.
Yeah. But so it feels like in this documentary, like, if he wanted the part was his. But he, like, called his buddy, like, sort of had, like, this, like, existential freak out, like, I don't want to do three or four of these movies. I don't want to be Superman for the rest of my life. And I get that. But at the same time, he was Brian O'Connor for the rest of his life. You know what I mean? So, like, it's a different kind of thing. Maybe it's that he relates more to that gearhead than to a comic book character.
Yep.
But if your fear is that you're going to be pigeonholed into one role for the rest of your life, hey, that happened anyway.
Yeah, but it's a role that he more so wanted to play than Superman. So I kind of get it. Something that we a little bit skimmed over that they make very light of in the documentary was, like, they reference his financial problems.
Oh, yeah, a lot of bill collectors and stuff calling him.
Yeah, but they also mention early on that, like, his mom invested a lot of money into his acting.
And, like, acting school and stuff.
Yeah, but they, like, don't go into that, and I really wish we could learn more about that and, like, and how much that was an influence on his life choices, because it kind of felt like they were hinting that his mom spent everyone's, like, the familial money to make Paul a star, and then he felt the responsibility of, like, taking care of the family through acting later.
I don't know. I didn't get that sense, because it seemed to me that by the time he hit 18, he wanted to walk away from acting, because he was like, I have this money saved up. I can live a simple life. You know, I have all these checks from, like, commercials and bit roles and stuff. And then by the time he was 18, by the time he was able to sort of, like, you know, set out on his own or whatever, none of the money was left. So I don't know that it's possible that the mom spent the entire family's money. I just got the sense that she spent all of, like, his earnings, but not in a way where
it wasn't,
like,
malicious.
She spent it on herself, right?
Yeah.
It seemed like she spent it on him, but she spent, I think, way more than he realized she was spending.
Well, I'm just thinking about, like, you know, I had that thought that I think I mentioned it to you in a chat that we were talking about that NHL player whose parents, you know, pilfered all of his earnings because they were his manager.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that's on the brain. So I couldn't tell if it was like that or not. The way that they, like, kind of danced around it, and, you know, he's 18 now and he has all these bill collectors calling, it kind of seemed like maybe he was supporting the family somehow in a more mild way than this.
It's possible. I mean, you don't really get a sense of, like, I feel like that's another sort of limitation by the hour-long time frame and not going too deep. Like, you sort of don't get a sense of, like, what anybody else was doing. You know what I mean? Like, you don't.
Like, nobody was doing anything but Paul Walker, right?
Right.
Like, he was, like, maybe surfing with his brothers and shit, but at the same time, and his friends, but it's like, at the same time, like, who was doing what else?
Yeah, exactly.
And it seemed like once he did start making money and had the Fast and the Furiouses, like, you know, his parents and nobody around him had to work anymore, right? Like, his brother, his friends, like, everybody kind of seemed like they were just coasting at that point.
Right, exactly. One of my favorite things in the documentary, in the hour, was the clip they show of him on MTV Cribs where he just shows off an RV and that's it.
Yeah.
When he's movie star Paul Walker and he just, like, shows off his, like, tiny little RV. Like, it's super weird and cool and just sort of goofy and fun.
Yeah, it was quirky and fun. It reminded me of, like, the kind of, like, the interviews and stuff we see with Channing a little bit, or Zeff even, that they, like, do, like, all this wacky shit. And I guess when you're just, like, a heart-throbby guy like that, you can't be, like, bland. Like, they can't be like, this is my dope house that I have now. You know, like, And they seem like they kind of have cool personalities, so it's fun that he was just like, yeah, I'm going to show off this dumbass RV that me and my friends bought 10 years ago to go surfing one summer and pretend this is my house. So
right. Because, I mean, I wasn't in this world. Like, I wasn't watching Fast and Furious movies. I wasn't into the franchise when this was happening. But, like, they show him and Vin Diesel, like, on TRL. Like, he was, like, a heartthrob. He was, like, he was a star. And, like, you know, the two of them went everywhere. They call him, like, oil and vinegar or whatever. That they have, like, these two opposite personalities.
Yeah.
That they say make the salad dressing in the movie that works. But, like, I just didn't realize. I mean, I should have. Like, I didn't realize just, like, how popular he was. They were.
Oh, no. Yeah, he was huge. And, like, I lived in, like, the TRL Cribs world. Paul Walker, like, every time, like, you know, as soon as the first movie came out, and it was just a huge success, he was everywhere, right? Like, just the same way that, like, now I'm sure that we don't even realize the gravity that Zeff holds on MTV now.
Yeah.
You know? Because, like, we're not... I'm beyond MTV age, so... But I do remember Paul Walker being part of that, and that was really cool to see, too. Because I had forgotten about it. It's not something, like, you know, you keep in the forefront of your mind, but it's
right.
Cool to have seen it happen again.
There was a weird line in the documentary that... I'm pretty sure I heard it right. It just doesn't really make sense that they were saying that, I think it was his stunt double buddy was saying that on a lot of movies, Paul would like break a finger early on, but that would like get him like energized and keep like the pain would keep him in the moment. I was like, what are you talking about? Did you hear that?
Yeah. He said that he would like when he like fucked his knee up in the movie with Jessica Alba.
Yeah.
That he was just like, oh no, like let's finish the shooting and I'll go get surgery afterwards. It lended itself to being that he was just like this adrenaline junkie kind of
right.
Like, yeah, that he was just like, okay, like the pain is fine and I'll just take it. It's cool. I mean, like I know some people that are like that. They're like, oh, yeah, like, fucking let's do it. And then they're just like, it's cool, let's finish, you know? Yeah, it's weird, though. It's not something that I would do.
Because it also sounds like, I mean, it didn't, like, this wasn't what he was saying, but it sort of sounded like what he was implying. But his friend was basically like, yeah, he would, like, go and intentionally break a finger, like, give him this, like, adrenaline
rush.
No. Like,
no,
I know that's not
what
he was saying,
like
but it
that.
Sort of sounded like, oh, like, on a lot of movies it would happen. It's just like, oh, that's just, it just sort of seemed odd.
Yeah, it seemed like he just wanted to be, like, the stuntman, so... I'm sure that he was trying to get more involved than any of the producers and managers wanted him to be. And that's why, like, the same buddy was saying, you know, he always wanted to ask me, like, how does it feel? And he's like, not good. You know, like,
right.
Like it's not fun getting thrown off the bridge in Too Fast, Too Forever, which you will hear in the episode coming out soon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he wanted to know how it was because he was, like, prone to jumping out of planes and doing all this dumb shit, so.
Yeah. They get into him being, you know, reach out worldwide, talking a lot about donating money and donating time and donating effort to the earthquake relief in Haiti. Like
that was like their first big mission, right? It kind of seemed like that's how they made it seem. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what they
because
it
just
seemed
like he wanted to do something. Like he knew that he had this money and this like influence,
yeah,
and just wanted to do something. And so it sounded like, I don't remember the exact specifics, but like they couldn't get to Haiti, but they got sort of close and they were just helping there.
So what happened was he wanted to go down there. He's like, I want to go down there and I want to be like in the shit and help.
Yeah.
And so he called his, you know, his brother who called his firefighter friends and he was like, do you like know any guys that want to go down there? And he's like, and the firefighter's like, yeah, you know, there's some people that are like live for like really helping people that really desperately need it. Because of the earthquake, there was no like, there's only government flights into and out of Haiti.
Oh, right.
So they flew into the Dominican because actually Vin Diesel knew people in the Dominican to like get into the Dominican. And like once they got there, then they got him a helicopter and stuff like that. And they kind of like tag teamed the Fastiverse a little bit, right? And then they like got to the shit and they were in Haiti and they were helping out. But that was really cool. I honestly didn't even know about his charity before this.
Yeah, I don't think I did either.
Because he did a really good job of distancing himself from it, like making it, you know, just a charity, not like Paul Walker's charity or whatever.
Right. The only thing I think I knew, and I don't think I knew about the charity, but I remember when he died, like, I remember people saying, oh, he was, like, a really good person, and, like...
Like, when Prince died, everybody kind of came out and said the same thing, like, you guys will never know, like, all the shit that Prince did because he, like, did it without telling anybody.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Exactly.
Like,
a little bit.
Yeah, as soon as Prince died, like, everybody came out and they were like, yo, like, Prince didn't let me tell anybody this, but Prince did, like, this, and, like, he paid for this, and all this other shit that, like, Prince would have never let anybody know about, but, like, one person would know, like, all of these things that he did, and then another person would know a bunch of other things that he did, and they would all say, like, oh, he gave me money for this, and I can imagine Paul Walker being kind of the same way.
And, you know, I don't know about Prince, but I know that Paul Walker, the last note that I have in my notes, Tyrese just saying... He gave the best hugs, man.
Yeah, that was a really good one. I like that last Tyrese interview because he said when they were in Miami, he's just like, Paul Walker's just like the most ideal handsome white man. And like, yeah, that just description, like you could see it run through Tyrese's face, like him just like reminiscing back to it, just like, damn, he was like a good looking dude, you know what, yeah, I mean, like he was like kind of in awe of how beautiful Paul Walker was, right?
And he kind of hints at a little bit like the sort of the mischief or the fun that they got into on Too Fast Too Furious, that like,
yeah,
you know, a good looking white dude, a good looking black dude, and just surrounded Miami by like beautiful women in Miami, like, all right.
I wonder if Tyrese was kind of hinting that they were doing a bunch of drugs together.
It might have been. Like, I don't know. It just seemed like they did a bunch of stuff that, like, a dad of, like, a newborn wouldn't really necessarily maybe want to do.
Yeah, they seem like they got into a lot of girl trouble.
Yeah.
And that I understand. And then you got, like, that evil, like, smirk and, like, the giggles. Like, when Tyrese, yeah, was thinking back to them being in Miami, he was like, yeah, we were just, like, really getting into trouble. You know what I mean? Like, we were screwing, right, around too much and stuff like that. So, I, yeah, wonder what they were up to. I would like to see, like, the behind the scenes of Too Fast, Too Forever and see, like, what was actually happening and stuff.
Yeah. The only other thing I have written down is that, you know, Paul just lived by this mentality, like, be good or do good, and just, I think that's just a real simple, but, like, you know, just be a good person. Just do good.
I like the be good reminder. I personally live by the be safe reminder, just because I think everybody, you know, like, you should just let your friends and loved ones know that, like, they should be safe, that you care about them.
Yeah.
But I like the be good one too, man. Just like, just be good. Just do good. Try to be your best. Like, be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that you can relate to. It's something simple. Like, I don't want to print that on a t-shirt, but it's something that if my friend was like, just be good, man, you'd be like, yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Exactly. Do you have any other notes or anything else you want to say about this documentary?
No, something that I was talking about before, though, I just want to say how cool it was. To me, the coolest scene in the whole documentary was when they were shooting the commercial for Reach Out Worldwide, and the director, or like the camera, whoever, is like, don't you want to say, like, join me, Paul Walker, to like support Reach Out Worldwide? And he's like, no, man, that makes it too much about me, and like, this is about everyone.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, you sure you don't want to say that? And he's like, yeah, I'm good. Like, we're just going to keep it the way I said it, which is like, if you watch the first take of it, he seems like they found a celebrity to talk about this charity, not that it's his charity that he's talking about. This could have easily been, like, him, Vin, and a bunch of people just, like, show up and they're like, join, Reach Out Worldwide. Like, you know, like, quick clip at the end. And I thought that was really humbling to see. You know what I mean? Like, for him to do that and them to have that outtake, I was like, wow, a lot of the things that these people are saying feels real now just by seeing that. So it was a good choice to put in the documentary. Yeah.
That'll just about do it, I think, on this little sort of a bonus episode. Of Too Fast, Too Forever. We'll be back in about a week or so on September 1st.
And if you heard through this, watch it. Watch the documentary. Yeah. It was really cool. We talked about it, but it was actually really cool to see. Check it out. There was, like, lots of other parts that we didn't talk about, like, you know, early childhood videos and kind of stuff. And it's cool to see Paul Walker younger. So I recommend it. I think you should give it a shot if you liked if you like Fast and the Furious and you like Paul Walker. Can't beat it, so.
Yeah, don't expect a ton, but just sort of go there and just get some admiration for, you know, Brian Earl Spilner.
Exactly. Brian O'Connor.
They're probably re-airing it on Paramount. You can also find it online, so just, you know, go watch it. And again, without commercials, it's like 60 or 61 minutes. Like, it's super, like, short.
It's not very long. It felt like it blew by, so.
So for all things Too Fast, Too Forever, including this month's other episode of the Fast and the Furious Lap 2, or next week's episode of Too Fast, Too Furious Lap 2, you can go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, family@cageclub.me. We have a mailbag. We'll do that on the regular episodes. Not gonna
be here. Don't think you missed out on the mailbag. It'll be coming next week, right? And no, you said the next one comes out next week.
Yep.
So yeah, wait for that. We didn't skip it. We're just, you know, waiting to do it on the real episode.
Yeah, just a little bit of a bonus episode here. Go to facebook.com/toofasttooforever to like our page
memes and the memes that I find or make, or the nonsense that I post drunk about me watching the movies, even when they're not in order. You know what I mean? Like, if I don't even have to watch a movie, sometimes we get drunk and put one on anyways, and I'll tell you about it there.
So cageclub.me or facebook.com/toofasttooforever. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe too.
And we'll see you next week for Too Fast, Too Furious right here on Too Fast, Too Forever.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. We've come a long way from where we began. Oh, I'll tell you